Welcome. This is Gwen Garcelon. Thanks for listening today. This is The Inner Game. And I hope this conversation will serve you on your own path of living life fully. The inner game is our relationship to our purpose, to the contribution we want to be in bringing forth a more beautiful world. These are conversations with people who are up to something evolutionary in their lives, and an opportunity to hear about how these people grow personally and how that strengthens their organizations and businesses to make a bigger difference. Our guest today is Chris Beebe. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Chris is the owner and principal at BCS Group in Carbondale, and they provide architectural services and consulting. And that is not the major driving passion in Chris's life, but just, you know, to give a little context, we'll start there. And because you actually had some really interesting things to say about your practice of architecture and design and helping people in that arena, tell us a little bit about how that lands for you in your life and what that feels like it's about.
Gosh, architecture, you know, is a beautiful practice. I really enjoy residential because creating spaces that people live in is, I guess, just more rich for me, and impacting lives in that way, in how they live and where they live and what that looks like for them on a daily basis is much more enjoyable than commercial or institutional or big corporate projects.
Right. Yeah, you were saying that you have people think about, you know, where they're going in their life and what's the dynamic of what will be happening and how you design a space for that. And I thought that was so conscious and lovely.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, how do you live? How do you want to live? These are questions that I like to ask my clients. And we get around to budget and we get around to materials and we get around to forms and things like that. But yeah, to settle into what's happening now and what wants to happen in the future and what people want to become and how architecture can support that, you know, it's much more fascinating than the bricks and mortar, so to speak.
You talk about your house nurturing your well-being and your beingness, and maybe say a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, it's very personal to each client and to myself as well. You know, I think living intentionally and how that spills over into other parts of our lives starts with our first waking moment. Mm. And where do we wake up and what, you know, what does that look like? And do we head right to the kitchen for breakfast or do we stop along the way for some quiet moments or, you know, are the kids running in and jumping on the bed first? Those are all things to consider in the way we create our built environment. Yeah,
it's lovely listening to you and your experience of that, you know, because it's not something you normally maybe consider, you know, like what, you know, what do I see? What do I experience? Well, how do I flow through this space? You know, what are the dynamics? What's important to me that's reflected in this space?
Right.
It's really, really lovely. So I want to talk a little bit about kind of how you started on a path of just more noticing, more presence, more what was available. You mentioned how early on in your life there was something that occurred that kind of turned you on to the realization that, wow, there's more going on here than meets the eye.
Mm. Well, I am a short man, and I was kind
of... How tall are you, Chris?
I'm 5'3".
5'3".
On a good day, I like to say.
Rocking badassness.
And I was kind of, you know, at the bottom of the pecking order in what would be considered today some, you know, bullying behavior.
Yeah, right.
And there wasn't really that awareness at the time in the 60s. I'm 54 for a few more weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And
you look great, by the way.
Thank you. So do you, darling. And so I spent a lot of time in the principal's office. I did not take bullying. I did not turn the other cheek very well.
Yeah.
So, you know, middle school years, it started to tone down, but it was still kind of, it was still going on. And my mom and my father actually were in a transcendental meditation program.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to them somewhere along the line that maybe that would be good for me.
Bingo.
So around 13 or 14, I started a transcendental meditation practice.
God, how many 13 and 14-year-olds? Yeah, I mean, there probably are more these days with all right. the, you know,
well,
more
aware
people.
Well, our kids are practicing
yeah,
Tai Chi
yeah,
and
right,
school
right.
and yoga. And
but that was not the case
no.
in those days.
Not in Guilford, Connecticut in the 1960s. No.
So what did that provide for you?
Well, it did provide me with the things that it intends to provide, you know, in terms of a moment of calm
mm-hmm.
in the day. I practiced after lunch in the school for my 20 minutes of
right.
my mantra.
Man.
And I think so it provided me that immediate.
And who showed up in those stressful moments because of that? Did you notice that there was something else going on after a while, or how did that look?
You mean who, like in person?
Yeah. How did Chris show up?
How did Chris show up? Yeah, just you know, a lot more calm and clear.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I didn't have near the practice that I have today, but that was okay.
But you were 14.
I was 14, and I could give myself a little break. Like we talked before, you know, it did open my eyes to other ways of being and how other people lived their lives more mindfully. And
yeah.
mindful wasn't even a term then
right,
that
right.
I knew of.
Yep.
But, you know, it was just kind of like, oh, wow, there's this community of people that actually do this on a regular basis and
yeah.
not just do it, but teach it. And the guy was... He was a salesman at the shoe store where I bought my hush puppies, was my guru.
Wow.
Or my teacher, I
yeah.
would say.
Yeah.
You know, Maharishi was my guru at the time. But so, you know, it was like normal, regular person.
Yep.
You know, in corduroys and a button-down shirt.
Yeah.
Teaching me meditation and kind of starting to expose me to Eastern traditions. And so it was like, wow.
This can be a part
of
life.
There's a bigger world than just this little town on the shoreline.
Yeah. It was something you also mentioned to me when we were talking earlier was about how you all also started drinking in your early teens,
yeah,
you know, as
right.
a result of all this, which is
dichotomy.
So interesting to me that was occurring concurrently with this beginning into greater awareness and self-care and greater, you know, capacity. And I guess that's just sort of the pathos of
yeah.
you know, teen years.
Yeah. I don't know if I started drinking because I was short and being bullied or I don't necessarily think that those two paths are very different.
Yep.
Because I would say that my consequential kind of experimentation with drugs and other, you know, mind-altering behavior.
Yep.
Was part of the path.
Yeah.
I mean, they seem discongruent.
Right, right. I see what you're
saying.
And
dissonant.
Yeah.
But they got me, you know, but there was one path.
Right.
I was walking one path.
Just being aware and being experiencing
yeah.
it fully and
yeah.
going through it and noticing.
Puking my brains out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let's
yeah.
do it again.
Oh, man.
But,
and,
yeah.
and, you know, what does it take for us to, you know, make a different choice? Is it just being ready?
Right.
You know, is
right.
it being fully ready for that?
Yeah. And, I mean, it was a long time ago, but it could have been that I was drinking kind of in response to fear about this other path that was being presented to me.
Yeah. You know, and you think also that, you know, when you're also doing a practice that increases your awareness and your ability to be present, you're more able to be present to that pain and
right.
what you're really having to experience.
Right.
So that's a lot. That's
yeah.
a lot for a 14, 15-year-old to take in,
yeah.
you know, and we just take it in as we do.
Right.
Whatever our path happens to be.
Right.
We talked about how, you know, the shadows that you start to become aware of in yourself, whenever you do start to become aware of them, are things that sort of stay with you and you deepen the relationship, you shift the relationship with them over time. You know, they you can make different choices with them, take them out of the driver's seat or whatever that might look like.
Right.
And I've realized I've often thought of it that way as well.
Right. Yeah. My favorite metaphor is the dining room table with all my different parts and pieces sitting and we're having a conversation and my insecure ego is running around the table, making noise, throwing a tantrum, trying to get attention in all the wrong ways.
Right.
And a few years ago, in the process of really diving deep with a teacher, it occurred to me to offer up a seat at the table and just say, hey, you know, you have some things to say, and if you can sit down and bring that funky, quirky energy into the conversation, but in a way that we can all understand it and relate to, I'm talking about all of us, like all my pieces.
Right, right.
And my authentic self at the head of the table.
Right.
Then we can get it, you know, and we can have a conversation. Sometimes that sounds really kind of rational and you know, very fatherly.
Right.
But this, you know, but the bottom line is that it's worked, I think, pretty well. And I can still look at my ego and say, you're not really on track here. You're not really being positive in the conversation. And then we can kind of have that dialogue. And
it's such a compassionate way of approaching yourself and the different expressions of yourself. It feels like that's what maturity is about. Is making the choice to parent yourself, you know, the dysfunctional pieces of your inner child, in the way that you really want to show up.
Right. Yeah. And it was a big aha moment.
Yeah.
You know, and talk about quieting the mind. I mean, that was to not have that kind of energy in my mind and in my heart has made a big difference in the way I approach things since then. It took decades.
Right. Yep. It's amazing to get to this place and realize that. It's like, oh, we've come a long way. Still a long way to go, but you know, come a long way. Well, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. My guest today is Chris Beebe, and we're talking about how he plays a bigger game in his life through a commitment to deepening his authentic expression of service. And that really feels true.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about your daily practices. What does that look like to kind of nurture what it takes to, you know, stay playing at the level of the game you want to play?
Gosh. It changes. It changes. And currently, as in currently like today, I started with 20 minutes of meditation, and my meditation practice has evolved over the years, taking parts of things I've learned, and sometimes it's just a lot of chatter, and I've learned to become okay with that and not try to make my meditation something that it's not on any given day. I came to a point some time ago where I tried to approach life as a walking meditation. So trying to make every moment have some sense of meditative practice.
And isn't that the goal? That we walk in life as aware and as at choice as we can.
And again, not trying to make that moment something that it's not. And if it's not quiet, then it's not quiet.
Right. And we get thrown out of the saddle.
And we're just out of the saddle.
Right.
And that's okay. Because, you know, we've been there probably in one form or another, and we can get back in the saddle.
Right.
Or not. We may end up walking next to the horse for years.
Well, I want to make sure we talk a little bit about this mobile app that you're developing, because that feels like a passion that's really reflective of you know, what you care about in life.
A few years ago, I was working on the road a lot and trying to maintain a healthy, fit lifestyle, which has been important to me for a long time.
Right.
and just really struggled when I was outside of my known zone, mm-hmm. as I like to call
yep.
it.
Yep.
And so ended up, you know, a lot of times just coming out of meetings at 5 o'clock in a strange town, not even knowing what town I was in, and trying to find the things that make me kind of hold my space in the world, and struggle to do that. You know, and it was funny because it was at the time in mobile apps where, you know, the tagline for everything was, oh, there's got to be an app for that.
Right, right.
You know, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And there wasn't for what I was trying to do. And, you know, I came out of that experience and other things happened in life and kind of put that on the back burner for mm-hmm. a while. And then it came back around and it's gotten a lot more serious and intentional mm-hmm. in the last couple of years. And it's become the thing that I think about in the morning when I wake up.
And you shared with me the ripple effect of feels like, you know, that's the important thing about this. That's what kind of keeps calling to you. Is the potential of what this could provide for people.
Yeah,
Which is what?
Well, you know, I'm fascinated with the ripple effect of what this could be in terms of, you know, if we get what we need kind of taken care of mm-hmm. when we're out of our kind of normal everyday, mm-hmm. I think that it allows us to be much more authentic, to kind of deepen whatever intention that we have in our service to the world. And that, you know, I mean, that sounds pretty heady and big.
Yeah.
And it may not impact everybody in that way. But I'm fascinated with, you know, if somebody's traveling and they're on a business meeting and, you know, they get what they want, what makes them whole in the morning. They mm-hmm. get a yoga practice or they get a run and they get a healthy breakfast and they come into this meeting just totally kicking ass.
Right.
And creative.
And they're fully present.
And they're fully present.
And fully functioning.
Instead of just kind of scattered and, you know, a little bit off base.
Right.
Out of balance, then I think the ripple effect of somebody participating in life at that level can be phenomenal.
Yeah. That is so exciting. And I was thinking about, you know, how people might say, well, you know, are we dependent on those things, you know, in order to operate at that level? And I thought, well, you know, that's a valid observation. Although, can we also acknowledge the contribution that taking care of ourselves in an intentional, mindful way, you know, the contribution of that to a really generative and highly creative state, you know, to really be giving our gifts in the greatest way possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And it has occurred to me, am I supporting compulsive addictions mm-hmm. to, you know, fitness you know, kind of that mindset?
Yeah.
And it's also occurred to me from my own experience that there's only one way out of an addiction, and that's through a hole in the bottom.
Mm.
And I don't wish a bottom on anybody. and part of what I want to do with this project is work in some mindfulness and intentional practices and that sort of thing. And who knows if, you know, how it will affect somebody in that kind of compulsive behavior towards quote unquote good behavior.
Right.
It's hard to say. But I'm fascinated with the idea that somebody goes into that business meeting. They do a great job. People are affected. And maybe the other side of it is that they go, you know, they have a moment of clarity where they say, this is not what I want to do.
And a breakthrough becomes possible.
Yeah.
Right. That's and then terribly exciting.
Yeah. What's the ripple effect of that?
Exactly.
You know, somebody drops out of the corporate world and decides to coach track at their kid's high school. And steps into a whole new level of authenticity for themselves.
Mm.
You know, how does that affect their kids at home? How does that affect the kids on their team?
Right.
How does that affect other coaches in the athletic department?
And the world.
And the world. I
right.
mean, you know, somebody's living with a bigger smile.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, you know, what are the measurable impacts that you notice in your work and relationships? Like, what's What do you really start to notice, you know, when you think, wow, I'm playing at a different level in this relationship, or I'm bringing something more to this opportunity?
The teachings that I've been studying in the last 4 or 5 years have been much more world-centric, putting me in a position to look at every situation, not from my perspective or even someone else's perspective, but from the perspective of the situation and from the world, and even from the position of being the hands of the sacred.
Okay.
So the first thing that I've noticed is that I take longer to respond, which is maddening to some people. But at the end of the experience, I feel like that's worth it.
Yeah.
To just slow the thing down a little bit, especially in situations that are charged and have the potential for getting sidetracked and off purpose. That's been one of the most notable things. Another interesting thing that I thought of kind of recently was that numbers are the language of the ego. Often, not always, but often.
What does that look like?
That looks like, you know, some measure of accomplishment, whether that's athletic or business or even personal. I don't know exactly how to explain it, but if I get sidetracked into some conversation about, oh, how many projects I have, or, you know, what the dollar value is of those projects, or how many feet of vertical I climbed today on my skis. You know, I mean, it's like it's a distraction, I think, from the deeper purpose of those things. And not a good metric.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the good metric is. Right. You know, is it smiles? Is it satisfaction? Is it improving lives of others? I don't know.
Right.
You know,
well, it's whatever that is for you, because you're making the distinction. Quality, not quantity.
Right.
So how does quality show up? And, you know, for you, it's what it is for you.
And it's interesting, you know, being in the business world, both as a business person in architectural design and a business person in technology, and talking to investors and talking to business people and bankers, and those people speak the language of numbers.
Right.
And so to kind of place myself in that conversation with a little different perspective can be challenging for sure.
And yet that's what it looks like when the old paradigm is bumping up against a new paradigm.
Yeah.
There's a dissonance there, and there's like, oh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yet it's strangely compelling because it's useful and helpful.
And there's
and
a
healing,
and there's a big push, I think, or at least that I've become aware of, and it's just my perspective. But there's a big push towards mindfulness in even the, you know, higher levels of the corporate world, and to have this conversation about numbers and ego and personal satisfaction and personal growth in that atmosphere and that environment is actually supported by the people that I want to work with. And the people I don't want to work with look at me like I'm a Martian.
Right.
So,
and that's okay.
So that's
like, good information.
That's a good information. Do I want to work with you if you're looking at me like I'm a weirdo?
Or if you're looking at, wow, this feels kind of good. This feels like what kind of, you know, energy I'd like to be in.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful place to end. God, thank you so much for this conversation, Chris.
Thank you, Glenn,
really,
for doing
really
this
exciting.
Whole thing. Is, you know, bringing this conversation into the mainstream is huge.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. This has been The Inner Game on KD&K. I'm Gwen Garcelon, and thanks so much to Chris Beebe for being here today. And I'm not exactly sure when our next date is that we'll be on the air with The Inner Game, but hope to have you join us again then. Thank you so much.
Clouds are swift, rocks are ancient, mountains are high, oceans gray. Winds are restless, trees are patient, you, my child, are away. Waves are crashing, rivers churning, planets twirling, stars ablaze. Storms are raging, atoms whirling, and you, my child, far away. To perceive these wondrous things, blackbird's wings to tell a story and dance.